Support for this podcast comes from the Peabody Essex Museum, presenting Ethiopia at the Crossroads. On view now. Find out more about the exhibition at PEM.org. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, this is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. American cardinals met today with top Vatican officials to discuss the priest sex abuse scandal that has rocked the church and shaken the confidence of the faithful. The eyes of the world are watching, eyes filled with pain, with doubt, with hope. From parish priests to the pontiff himself, the Catholic Church has faced stinging criticism over the way it covered up the scandal and handled it once the stunning allegations began pouring out in January. The Pope has summoned the U.S. clerics to the Vatican to find a way out of this crisis, and it appears he is wasting no time. In his strongest words yet, the Holy See issued a statement today that sex abuse by priests is a crime, and there is no place for abusers in religious life. Speaking today at the Vatican press conference, Wilton Gregory, head of the U.S. Conference of Bishops, had this to say.
This is a crisis of trust. It's trust in the holiness of priests and trust in the honesty of bishops, and that together.
This hour, we're talking about the Vatican meetings and the search for solutions to the church crisis. What do you need to hear from the Vatican? If you could attend the meetings, what would you be saying to the Pope and cardinals? Are you hopeful the church will find its way out of this crisis? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin tonight in Rome, where it's now 1 o'clock in the morning. Melinda Henneberger is Rome bureau chief for the New York Times. She's been monitoring developments in these historic meetings and now joins us live. Welcome, and thanks so much for being with us at this hour, Melinda.
Thank you.
Melinda, can you give us the scene there today in Rome and Vatican City? Is it orderly? Is it chaos? What's it been feeling like?
Well, it's unusual. A lot happened today. The Pope apologized in really strong terms to victims, but at the same time, he sent conflicting signals on the one strike and you're out policy that they're looking at that would kick out priests who have been found guilty of abusing minors.
He's saying if they truly came back and gave up their evil ways, perhaps he's leaving open the door that the church would have them back.
Well, on the one hand, he said people need to know there's no place in the priesthood for those who would harm the young. But on the other hand, he is saying that we should keep the door open to redemption, and we can't forget the power of Christian conversion. So even American cardinals after the meeting were saying, we're not really sure where that leaves us. We want this zero tolerance policy, but we're not sure how to interpret those remarks.
It leaves some ambiguity. What about the cardinals, Melinda Henneberger? What were they saying in and around the meetings today?
Well, they really took on a lot of very delicate issues. So they took on homosexuality in the priesthood and in seminaries. And one of the most interesting comments of the day certainly came from Bishop Wilton Gregory, who heads the American Conference of Catholic Bishops.
Yes.
Who said that it's an ongoing struggle to make sure the Catholic priesthood is not dominated by homosexual men.
What does he mean by that, Melinda?
He means that they see a gay culture in the priesthood and seminaries in particular as a problem, and that some heterosexual men are scared away because they fear harassment and not fitting in inside a seminary.
So that's a pretty pointed statement. What else from the cardinals?
It certainly is. They're also talking about celibacy, but not in the sense of throwing open the issue, in the sense of how can we better teach seminarians how to live a celibate life. One thing they're not talking about, last week Cardinal Roger Mahoney of Los Angeles really, I think, raised the expectations of a lot of American Catholics by saying that he planned to raise the issues of women's ordination and whether married priests should be allowed at these meetings. And
that's not on the
today,
table.
Today, in interviews with us, he said, I haven't done it, I'm not going to do it, and
It's just not happening in this conversation.
Yeah, almost as if the remarks had never been made. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it really had raised a lot of people's expectations.
Melinda Henneberger, can you give us this? Oh, I'm sorry. Please, give us the rest there.
Also, another thing that that Colonels had been suggesting was that there would be some push from within to get Bernard Law of the colonel from Boston to resign. He's been under a lot of pressure to do that, and that hasn't happened either. However, it was very interesting that at a meeting last night, Cardinal Law did apologize to his fellow American cardinals and said that, I realize if it weren't for my mistakes, we wouldn't be here today.
Melinda Henneberger, give us a sense of how this meeting is actually going on. Where are the cardinals? Is the Pope there all of the time or some of the time? Who are they meeting with?
Well, all the top Vatican officials are meeting with all but one of the American cardinals. And the Pope came today, opened the meeting, gave this really very strongly worded speech on the mm-hmm. subject. Mm-hmm. Did not stay for the rest of the meetings. The meetings are in the Vatican, in the Sala Bologna. And the Pope will be having lunch tomorrow with all of the American cardinals. And I think at the end of it, they will come out with a list of proposals that will help guide the American bishops when they meet this summer to come up with some national protocols that they hope that all dioceses in the country will implement to help prevent abuse cases in the future.
So, Melinda, is this the American prelates being chewed out at the Vatican, or have they come to get official blessing on some reforms or changes in the American Catholic Church?
They have not in any sense been called on the carpet. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Pope used some stern words today. He obviously reflected that the clergy hadn't lived up to anyone's expectations. But no, it was more, I think, Vatican officials wanted to hear from American officials what the situation really was here, and they wanted to give some guidance on how to proceed ahead of this meeting this summer.
Melinda, please stay with us for a few minutes. I want to bring into our conversation now Scott Appleby. He is professor of history and director of the Kushwa Center for the Study of American Catholicism at Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana. Good evening and welcome, Scott Appleby.
Hello.
Thanks for being with us again. Mm-hmm. Also with us from the studios of Vermont Public Radio is On Point News analyst Jack Beattie. Good evening. Welcome, Jack.
Hello, Tom.
Scott Appleby, you've been watching from afar what Melinda Henneberger is describing up close for us. Are you surprised at anything in the Vatican meeting so far?
No, I'm not, and I guess that's a little bit of a disappointment, I'd have to say. I'm not surprised that the question of celibacy is being discussed only in the context of ways of reinforcing the discipline. As Melinda mentioned, there was expectations were raised by Cardinal Mahoney and also Cardinal Stafford, as reported in the New York Times, that there would be kind of an open discussion of the difficulties of celibacy in the modern context and some ruminations about that among the cardinals, and apparently that's not going to be the case. But it was really not to be expected that there would be such discussion, and so hopes were raised, I guess, falsely. I never thought there would be discussion of the role of women in the church or in the priesthood, certainly the possibility of reconsidering the ordination of women to the priesthood, and that certainly appears not to have been raised. So what we did get today was, a strongly worded statement by the Pope. It was ambiguous in a number of ways, including the reference to conversion and the need for the Church to stay open to that possibility. Although I have to say, in reading the text itself, I wasn't entirely sure if the Pope was referring to the bishops or to priests who had had committed sexual abuse, because he inserted that line in a comment about the bishops themselves and their stewardship of the church. So I foolishly wanted to read it.
Who are we talking about here? When you say conversion, you mean a kind of redemption and forgiveness.
Right. He said, he says, let's see if I can find it. The church is viewed with distrust, and he makes reference to the need for the power of conversion. He says there are certain kinds of procedures that should be followed, and reliable criteria that led bishops to make decisions which subsequent events showed to be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, even while recognizing how indispensable these criteria guiding the bishops are, we cannot forget the power of Christian conversion, that radical decision to turn away from sin and back to God, which reaches to the depths of a person's soul and can work extraordinary change. Obviously, he's speaking there about the priest who committed pedophilia or the abuse of minors, but in a certain way it can also be read that the bishops themselves, although they can rely on criteria that are set formally in policy, they also need to discern the nature of their own priest and to pray about this situation. So
it certainly doesn't mean one strike and you're out. It's the Christian path to forgiveness here that he's opening up, which would seem to be in contradiction with a one strike and you're out policy. Isn't that the way it looks, Melinda Henneberger?
Yes, even the cardinals coming out of the meeting were really scratching their heads, saying you can read it one way or the other, and they all had different views, but there was certainly no consensus as to what the real meaning of what he had said was.
Melinda, where you sit in Rome near the Vatican, does it look like the Vatican gets it from an American perspective? Is there a full awareness of the depth of concern and even outrage in the United States now?
Versus where they were a month ago, they get it. You know, a month ago we were hearing this is an American phenomenon. Let's concentrate on more important issues. I mean, it was really being minimized in a way that I think a lot of American Catholics would find very offensive.
Mm-hmm.
Today, and the fact that they're here, I mean, even if nothing else happens, the fact that they've made this gesture, I think really does say that they get it in a new way, and that they wanted to hear directly from people in the American church what the experience was and how bad it was.
Mm-hmm.
And I think from our perspective, it's difficult to understand how they could not have understood. But, you know, the Vatican is in Italy, and this issue has not been in the Italian papers at all. And it's considered a frivolous and wholly American preoccupation.
Mm-hmm. Scott Appleby, do you have the sense at this point that the U.S. Cardinals will come home with clear marching orders, with a way forward from the Vatican?
Well, I think they're going to formulate policies tonight and tomorrow, and that they will have some general guidelines to report. But it will be left to the bishops' meeting and conference in June, all the American bishops, to actually set those policies and implement them. The hope is that the cardinals will come back from Rome with the permission of the Vatican to give those policies teeth, that is, to make them binding on all dioceses, and to set up procedures, perhaps a commission, a lay board, either a blue ribbon panel nationwide or in each diocese, that would ensure compliance with the policies, that would monitor the situation of priests, especially those accused of misconduct. I should, just to go back to the previous conversation, to make a point quickly, while the Pope talked about repentance and conversion and the possibility of forgiveness, if indeed he was referring to priests who've been accused or have committed sexual crimes and sins, that doesn't mean that those priests, even if they're forgiven, even if they stay in priestly ministry, should be reassigned to work with children or youth. And I would personally hope that the one strike and you're out rule applies at least on that level, that if someone has mm-hmm. indeed abused children or young men or women, they would never be placed again in a pastoral setting working with young people.
Melinda Henneberger, we know we've just got you for another 10 seconds, but meeting again tomorrow and the next day, how much more time together do the cardinals and the Vatican people have?
Just tomorrow. But mm-hmm. to answer that point that Scott was making, I think the interesting thing now is, I think from now on it is going to be one strike and you're out. But the real issue they have to grapple with now is, what about past cases? How mm-hmm. retroactive can this be? If someone did this 30 years ago and has no further history,
is that the one strike?
It? Do you kick them out? I think that really working out the details of that is where they have a lot of work to do.
There's the question. Melinda Henneberger with the New York Times, thank you so much for joining us from Rome tonight.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about America's cardinals in crisis at the Vatican tonight. What do you want the Pope to tell the cardinals? What will it take to restore your faith in the Catholic Church? I guess, how far should the Church's changes go? Is the Vatican up to the American Catholic Challenge? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined by Scott Appleby, professor and director of the Kushwa Center for the Study of American Catholicism at the University of Notre Dame, and by our own news analyst, Jack Beatty. Jack, you heard there from Melinda Henneberger in Rome and from Scott Appleby that there's already some ambiguity coming out of these meetings at the Vatican.
Yeah, it sounds that way. And the statement by one of the cardinals about homosexuality in the priesthood and what a struggle this was to make sure that the priesthood isn't dominated by gays, this, I think, might be alarming, or it could be alarming to gay priests who are faithful to their vows and who serve the.
I think we lost Jack there just for a second. We've got a clip of tape. You're back, Jack. Hi.
Yeah, we had a commentary on our program some weeks ago from a homosexual priest who was fearful that there, out of this conference, there might come a kind of equation of homosexuality with pedophilia, and that homosexual priests would sort of take it in the chin for the sins really of that others and for the sins of a very few. So, I think one of the questions about this meeting was, were they going to come out with a policy of openness, a policy of going back to the laity and working things out there, and possibly a policy where they began to talk about celibacy? Or were they going to come out with a more conservative position, which mm-hmm. was, we have to get these guys to be celibate, and we have to root out homosexuals in the church? I think a lot depends how this is going to play in America on how they settle that question, quite beyond the question of, you know, what they do about priests who have done this in the past. But this is looking forward. And if the American Catholic and there is a great gulf between what American Catholics think about these issues and what the Pope does.
Scott Appleby, what about that point? There has been built up, it would seem, in the American Catholic community, a very large expectation now for change, for reform. Do we have two conflicting tides running around here? Is the Pope likely to respond in saying the way to respond to this is by tightening up, not loosening up? Are we going to run into a kind of a reformation or restoration conflict here?
I think there is expectation that there will be more significant reform than just a set of policies about sexual misconduct and abuse. And I think there is some momentum among the laity. And here I have to say, you know, there's left, right, and center and all positions on the spectrum. But the people we're really talking about are the millions of Catholics who are kind of in the middle, who are normally not galvanized with these debates and don't get involved in heavy-duty theological debates mm-hmm. about women in the priesthood. So we're talking about the broad swath of kind of the what had been the silent majority up until this crisis. And I think now that silent majority is expecting a radical change. Now, what they mean by or what they anticipate that radical change will be is still a bit uncertain. And if the church goes in the direction it appears it will be going, that is, following the lead of the Pope, tightening up, as you put it, rather than loosening up, that is, keeping the structures intact, not discussing the problem or the question of celibacy or women in the priesthood, but trying to keep a tight lid on the priesthood and make sure that priests follow their vows. Well, that's the narrow way. Let's put it that way. That is, the burden will be on the church now in a way that it has never been before to set up procedures and practices for priests and all ministers of the church, and to be prepared for the kind of scrutiny and raised eyebrows, and the kind of the burden of proof will be on the church to restore its image. And it will be, I think, much more difficult the less drastic the structural reforms will be. And let me give you one example.
Please.
There's a middle way to reform here that doesn't necessarily involve celibacy or women in the priesthood, and that would be to go beyond policies just addressing sexual abuse and to really rethink and restructure the way the church governs itself by integrating laity into the actual decision-making of the church. Mm-hmm. Because the problem up to this point, the underlying problem, has been that bishops who, after all, are priests, and they tend naturally to identify with other priests and to identify with the clerical culture they were raised in. Mm-hmm. Those bishops have been asked to be administrators and legal guides and pastors and teachers and priests all in one, and it's clear that doesn't work. So if the church would really integrate laity, not just as window dressing and not just as consultants who come in as hired guns for a legal or financial consult, but if they integrate them into the ongoing decision-making of dioceses, then that could be the kind of structural reform that doesn't tinker with the theological questions of celibacy and the role of women, but nonetheless addresses some of the confidence-building measures that are needed.
Well, it might not be doctrinal, but isn't that in itself a very significant change in the Catholic Church to empower the laity in that way? Wouldn't that be in its own right a kind of revolution?
Well, in a sense, it would not, because the Second Vatican Council in the early 1960s spoke of the church as the people of God and began to develop a thoroughgoing theology of the laity, which called the laity to co-responsibility for the church in a way that simply had not been the case earlier. Mm-hmm. So there is precedent theologically for a greater role for the laity. Specifying that role and giving it deeper theological justification is the next step. And if there ever is going to be a time when the Catholic Church in the United States takes that step, it would be now. If they don't take it now, you can forget it. And then I think actually the future of the Catholic Church is in some senses in doubt if this opportunity to turn to the laity is rejected and we return to kind of the two-tiered church with a clerical elite and a majority of laity who are now somewhat suspicious of that system.
But if you bring in the laity or empower them, even in the administrative way you're talking about, doesn't that then also open the door to real discussion of these other issues of celibacy, of ordaining women, and so on?
Well, yes. I think that's – I don't want to suggest that's the hidden agenda, but certainly it would – whether or not those policies are changed and the ecclesiology or theory of the church in Catholicism is that those kinds of teachings, they have different levels of authority. The celibacy is a discipline. It could change tomorrow. The Pope believes that excluding women from the priesthood is something revealed by Christ and the apostles, so that would be much more difficult to change. But nonetheless, the decision-making authority on either issue and on any kind of doctrinal or disciplinary issue rests with the bishops and the Pope. That's not going to change, even if the laity become more involved.
Still, sense a kind of cultural shift in the works along this path.
Right. But what would be positive if the laity becomes involved is what's really lacking now is an open discussion, a give and take, a dialogue in which teachings like birth control, celibacy, the role of women in the church are really engaged fully, systematically by the most well-educated laity in the history of the world, which is the laity of the American church. And once that happens, then even the bishops and the Vatican may begin to rethink certain positions that the church has taken for a long time.
Scott Appleby, stand by. John is on the line. Welcome, John. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I guess I wanted to make the comment that I think what's happened here is not so much of a revolution of, or needs to be a revolution of the church, but morally a revolution from the perspective of the U.S. cardinals and bishops. For the last 20 years, they have been ignoring this pope and a lot of his encyclicals and a lot of his requests on how they teach the teaching of the Catholic Church, because they have their own perspective.
So, John, are you saying that the cardinals should take the pope's more conservative line and they would have stayed out of some of this trouble?
I don't, I don't I don't view it as a conservative or a liberal. There's a line, and they have chosen to ignore that line on numerous issues over the last 20 years, come out with statements, then found out that they were in conflict with the Pope. And this is the first time they've got themselves in a jam, and now they're running to the Pope and say, bail us out.
Scott, let me put John's question to you. Do you think that's a fair characterization of the U.S. Cardinals' record and what's going on now?
No, I really don't. I think the fault line is different than what John mentioned. I think the fault line is between the priest on one hand and the bishops, cardinal, and pope on the other on questions like if he's referring to traditional doctrinal teachings like birth control, the ban on that, the condemnation of abortion, and so on. What you find actually over the last 20 or 30 years is that these things are really not preached consistently from the pulpit, and that's the responsibility of the parish priest. And the implication is it's almost a bizarre world if you come in to the church and you know from outside of the church that these are controversial issues and that lay Catholics are practicing birth control in significant numbers, and it's not addressed from the pulpit, one wonders what is going on. Are there two churches, or why is there silence? And the suspicion is that the priests themselves are not convinced of the teaching. And that's what I mean, my point earlier, there needs to be, if the teaching's going to make any sense, it has to be embedded in people's lives. And for that to happen, it has to happen on the local level where there is discussion, dialogue, and good preaching. I think the cardinals were appointed and the bishops, and this is where I would disagree with John, they were appointed because they agree with the Pope uniformly on these matters, and some of them at least have been stronger in their public pronouncements about it. But none of them, it's true, has really done much to make these living teachings preached from the pulpit.
John, thank you for your call. Listeners, is it time for the Catholic Church to get more conservative or to open up to change? You can join our conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I want to turn now to Father Richard John Newhouse. He's editor-in-chief of the monthly journal First Things, published by the Institute on Religion and Public Life. Good evening and welcome, Richard John Newhouse.
Good to be with you.
Thanks for being with us. What do you hear in the words and statements coming out of the Vatican today? Are we on the path to some kind of resolution of this crisis in the American Catholic Church?
Resolution of the crisis, what the Pope is calling for is something much more radical than that, and that is conversion. He comes back to that very strongly. And he makes, I think it's a statement, the Pope's statement, that it's real tough talk and much needed. Not that he's saying anything new. He said these things for 23 years, but maybe under the pressure of the present scandal, he's going to get the bishops to really listen. And many of them have not listened before when he says, for example, quote, the world must know and the church must know that bishops and priests are totally committed to the fullness of Catholic truth on matters of sexual morality. And then he makes the tie-in with the lay people in their marriage and family life. And the basic message is, if you bishops are not teaching the faith effectively and living the faith effectively and making sure that your priests teach and live the faith effectively, how do you expect the lay people to understand and to live what the church teaches?
So, Father Newhouse, we've been talking about how, on the one hand, many American Catholics seem to be looking to structural change to address this problem, to looking again at celibacy, to looking at ordaining women. You're saying, listen to the Pope and take a more conservative path toward hewing more closely to fundamental Christian teaching, not to structural change.
Yeah, no, I don't think we're talking about conservative path here or liberal path. I think we're talking about fidelity. There are three things that this whole scandal is about, and the three things are fidelity, fidelity, and fidelity. The fact is, the undeniable fact is that an awful lot of bishops, and the bishops bear the primary responsibility here, an awful lot of bishops have been negligent and, in some cases, sad to say, criminally complicit in what has gone wrong and what has created these scandals. I mean, to put it very simply, and I think indisputably, if bishops and priests had been living and teaching what the church teaches and had been faithful to their vows, we wouldn't have a scandal. We wouldn't be having this discussion.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Jack Beatty, do you think that given what we've seen uncovered in the last months, all the stories that have come out, that as powerful and respected as the Pope may be, that him telling the clergy to be better Christians, is going to be accepted in the United States as sufficient?
I don't know. I just think that the laity, as Mr. Appleby has said, is way ahead of the hierarchy, and the hierarchy has been damaged. This isn't just the behavior of a few bad priests. This is the behavior of a hierarchy that consciously, in some cases, winked at violations, at crimes, that put the interests of the church bureaucracy ahead of the parishioners. So, but I think I wanted to pick up on something that the Father Newhouse said. I mean, what we outside Catholics call the pelvic issues have sort of come to define this papacy. I mean, I read in the Times that the Pope has appointed 118 or the 126 cardinals from whom the next Pope will be picked, and that his main criteria have been, you know, do you support the ban on birth control, and are you against the ordination of women? Well, the ban on birth control is one way where the Catholic Church's doctrine has social effects. There are some other ways that are very good, but people who travel in the third world would raise their eyebrows to say that this was a very good policy. And I think, you know, you can see the same indifference to the effects on human beings that's manifested in this crisis in the adherence to that policy in the context of the exploding poverty of the third world. There's the same lockstep fealty to institutional doctrine above its effect on people, and the same pelvic fixation. And I just think that, you know, that issue not being discussed and not being reexamined and tied in as it is with celibacy, with keeping women out, I just think that's the ghost at the feast here.
Father Newhouse, what do you think?
Disagree. I don't think he's in any ways this pontificate been preoccupied with the pelvic issues. It's been a magnificently aggressive teaching pontificate dealing with questions of human rights, human dignity, the nature of democratic government, on and on and on. The fact is that the magnificent teaching initiatives of this pontificate have not been well received. But at the heart of it all is faithfulness. I mean, the rest of it is smoke and mirrors. We can talk celibacy now until the cows come home and women's ordination, and the bishops will likely come up in Dallas with new guidelines. We got guidelines coming out of the ears, or they'll put on some new psychological screening procedures. We got psychological screening coming out the ears. What we need are these bishops on their knees. If they're not on their knees in Dallas, confessing the fact that they have messed up, and a genuine asking for forgiveness, first of all from God, then from the Catholic people, and then from the world to whom they are supposed to bear a clear witness. And if there doesn't come out from bishops on their knees a clear resolution that they're going to respond to the Pope's call to fidelity, then all the rest of it is just smoke and mirrors.
Father Newhouse, we only have 20 seconds left, but if you're a lay Catholic in America, how do you know when there's enough sincerity there to trust the priesthood again with your children?
Oh, I don't think most Catholics are worried about that. One of the things that we've seen in the last weeks and months is an enormous rallying of the Catholic people to their local parishes and their local priests. What needs to be reestablished is trust and confidence in the leadership of the bishops, and they have to understand that in the American ethos, leadership is not simply bestowed by apostolic authority, although it certainly is bestowed by apostolic authority, but it has to be earned and renewed day by day and week by week in the living out of a faithful witness to the Catholic Church's teaching.
Father Richard John Newhouse, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
God be with you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about America's cardinals in crisis at the Vatican. We're joined tonight by Professor Scott Appleby. He's professor of history and director of the Kushwa Center for the Study of American Catholicism at the University of Notre Dame. And by you, what do you want the Pope to tell the cardinals? What will it take to restore your faith in the Catholic Church? And I guess, is a battle royal shaping up between American reformers and Vatican traditionalists and their U.S. supporters? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Kathleen is on the line. Welcome, Kathleen. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you for taking my call.
Good to have you.
The first comment I have to make is my last name is Gagan. And lately I've had to pronounce my name Gagan because I'm an interfaith minister. Mm-hmm. And when doing my job and I tell people my name Kathleen Gagan, there was a response because I live out in Cape Cod.
And there's just too much response to the Father John Gagan scandal.
That's the first thing that impacted me. There's so many levels. I'd like to address this problem. Father Newhouse was talking about fidelity. And my real gut feeling about this is that the church needs to die and be reborn. That's a Christian principle of resurrection. And
that's a large statement. What do you mean by that, Catherine?
I think that we've lost our way way back. If you look at the loving teachings of Jesus, who loved women, who was very close with Mary Magdalene, and the figure she's become in the church, I think, has been turned into the whore turned virgin. That is the same, what someone was talking about, the pelvic fixation. I think the core issue here is that priests, as well as the Catholic, being brought up with the division between what is truly a balance between the feminine and masculine, and how the church, with its hierarchy, has really submerged the feminine mystery that was a part of the early church, the loving relationship between people that is totally human and totally divine at the same time.
You mean a sexual relationship?
Yeah, I think it's not only that, though. I feel like it's almost that submergence of the feminine that was a part of the Celtic Catholic Church.
Kathleen, you're speaking as a former Catholic who's now an interfaith
Catholic. I consider myself a very way expanded Celtic Catholic. And that's how I still, because I am an interfaith minister, mm-hmm. and part of my training was to make peace with my church of origin. Mm.
Kathleen, I want to put that to Scott Appleby, and thank you so much for your call. Scott, here's an example of the kind of thoroughgoing call for change in Kathleen's florid terms. She's calling for the church itself to die and be reborn. Maybe that's extreme, but it's an example of an American sentiment right now.
I have to say that on some of the issues that I infer she's concerned about, especially the treatment of women in the church, that the church does need to be reborn. There's a great deal of insensitivity in the church, I'm afraid, on the part of men and sometimes on the part of the hierarchy to the role of women. The exclusion of women from the priesthood is just the tip of that iceberg. Because one of the negative side effects of clerical culture is a set of attitudes that range across a spectrum. At the negative end, there is a lack of comfort with women in ministry and a lack of comfort in actually dealing as equals with women on the part of some people in the church, some men. At the other end of the spectrum, I should say, there are bishops and priests who welcome the wonderful talents and gifts of women in the church and celebrate them. And I guess what I'm saying is the rebirth needs to come on that end of the spectrum where there is a closed-off attitude toward the gifts of women. I think that's a serious challenge for the church and a problem because there's been so much controversy these last number of years on the role of women that it's all been quite negative, and we haven't devoted enough time to constructive and positive images on this question, and I think much more attention needs to be devoted there.
And in that, we can see how the agenda that potentially grows out of the sex abuse scandal can just get larger and larger. I want to turn to Father Bob Bowers. He's calling, he's pastor at St. Catherine's Church in Charlestown, Massachusetts. Good evening. Welcome, Father Bob Bowers.
Good evening. Thank you.
Thanks for calling. You've been listening along to the conversation. What do you hear in the words coming out of the Vatican today, and where do you stand on this notion that, the question of whether the most important message from the Pope is for the clergy to straighten up and fly right, or whether there needs to be some structural change to address the problems that have tumbled out in these last months?
Well, I think I stand with my people in my parish and listen to their voices and hear what they're saying. And I think one of the elements missing out of the conversation is a discussion of pedophilia as a sickness, as an illness that has baffled people. And that some of the things I'm hearing about faithfulness and about drawing people into a straight line marching order here really doesn't deal with the issue that's there. It's sickness and the scandalous behavior of cover-up that has rocked the church. It's really down to that more than anything else at this point.
So what are your parishioners saying? How would they like to see this problem addressed?
Well, they see it multifaceted. They are very supportive of me as their pastor and as priests in general. They are very supportive, and their faith is solid. But they really want dialogue. They want open, honest dialogue, and they want their voices to be heard. It's a concern that I've heard. We've had four listening sessions. We have a fifth coming up. Every single session, clearly, is we don't feel like we're being heard, and they want that to be really pronounced.
And dialogue, is what's coming out of the Vatican today going to sound like an invitation to dialogue to your parishioners?
I am not sure. I think it's nice. It's remarkable to hear the Pope, as strong as he has been, stating about the Church being viewed with this distrust and the offense that people are taking. I'm relieved to hear the Pope say that. I think people are going to feel the same way. But there's concern. I have concern, too, that the empowerment of the bishops to solve this problem may not be the whole solution here. It may be beyond their competence to do so.
So after the dialogue, what's it going to take in your parish to restore confidence and trust?
I've already stated to the people here that, you know, my role as pastor and my work as a priest, I have to do the very best job that I can do is that. But I have said to them over and over, and they agree, that their ability to be together and strong and to voice their opinions and make them known has got to take shape somehow. And many of them are looking at some of the groups that are forming, lay groups that are forming in the Boston area, as a way and an avenue to speak. And I am encouraging them as strongly as possible to write letters, to take an active role, to become very well informed, and not to base it all on news reports, but to become informed themselves by their own dialogue and to keep the discussion going as much as possible.
So here's another report of an increasingly empowered laity, this time led by the parish priest. Thank you so much, Father Bob Bowers, for joining us.
You're welcome.
John is on the line. Welcome, John. You're on the air.
Hi. I'd just like to say that it's time for an American inquisition. You have to look at this child pedophilia as a criminal behavior that's infested the church. And I don't think they'll ever get their confidence back or credibility until they go through and lie detector tests, whatever they have to do, to every priest. I mean, the idea that it's some kind of fidelity issue is an abomination. It's a criminal behavior. Pedophiles are not going to raise their hand and volunteer to step down. You're going to have to root them out. And until that happens, and the church is the only one capable of doing that, because our government is not going to be strong enough to take on that institution. Mm. And they got to do it from internal and root these guys out and get them out of the priesthood.
So you want it root and branch. John, thanks for your call. Scott Appleby, there's a listener voice saying a call to fidelity just won't be enough.
Well, I think that's true for the tiny minority of priests who are ill, who are mentally ill, who are pedophiles. And also for those priests who abuse minors, not children, I think in that case there has to be a thoroughgoing rooting out, as he would put it. But I do resonate with Father Newhouse's call to fidelity in the sense of the regrettable period in the seminaries when there was kind of a wink and a nudge at homosexual or heterosexual violation of celibacy. There was a kind of a culture of tolerance of behavior that never should have been tolerated, in part out of the desperation to retain seminarians and ordain priests in a church that is growing by the leaps and bounds in terms of the number of laity who need to be ministered to, but is shrinking in terms of the number of ordained priests. And that's, I think, part of what is meant by fidelity. There cannot be a compromise on what is required of priests for matters of expediency. And if there's any kind of violation of celibacy in the priesthood, it should be dealt with swiftly and surely. So I think there is something to be said for that.
Well, what do you say, Mr. Appleby, to Gary Wills' contention that it's celibacy that's really at the root of all this, because it makes for a culture of secrecy and a culture of hypocrisy? These people live in glass houses, and nobody wants to throw a brick.
Well, I don't think celibacy in itself makes either for a culture of secrecy or hypocrisy. People live their vows of celibacy as the majority of priests do. They do so honorably, and they are open and transparent and sharing people. The problem is the violation of the vow of celibacy and the difficulty also in attracting young men to a priesthood in which celibacy is not supported by the culture at large and in which seminary culture seems also to mock it. So celibacy in itself, I disagree with Gary Wills on that. I think the history shows that celibacy itself is not the problem.
How does seminary life mock celibacy?
To the degree that some seminaries are known to be havens for homosexual activity and sometimes for heterosexual activity. There are a number of seminaries in the country that have a reputation for behavior that is simply unacceptable. So there's a kind of a subculture within the seminaries and within the priesthood that has been rumored and talked about for some time before the current scandal. And it's no surprise to those who've heard those rumors that with the current scandal, we see an extent of misbehavior in the priesthood. Again, it's a minority.
But it's been tolerated.
But it's been tolerated.
Father John Baptist Koo is calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Welcome, Father Koo.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Good to have you.
Before I even make my comments, say I'm happy celibate and attracted to women, and I don't see celibacy fostering hypocrisy or secrecy necessarily.
Welcome to all that.
Okay, I think there's a great deal of confusion in discussing possible changes such as changing the church structure or embracing abortion or ordaining women, which really is tantamount to starting a new religion. If you can have, you can have a great system such as a democracy, but if it's run by demons, the results won't be good.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have less than virtuous men in the bishop's offices, we can have problems that won't be corrected by structural changes. If Jesus is who he says he is and he founded an apostolic church, then that structure is not negotiable. The bishops will always have an authority in a way that the lay people won't. Now, if they're secure and they're wise, of course, they'll avail themselves of the wisdom of the laity and include them. But that structure, the apostolic authority, if the church is apostolic and if Jesus is who he says he is, that there's they're going to...
The church has split before, famously and profoundly, in the Protestant Reformation over lots of issues of authority and doctrine. You're saying the solution here is to tighten up with Rome?
Well, I mean, I think Father Newhouse is right about bringing up fidelity. I think that the church structure, in some of the discussion about talking about structural changes, we seem to be departing from apostolic authority. And I think that's tantamount to starting a new religion, and maybe some people would embrace that, but I think that's the issue. I don't think you can. There are certain things which are non-negotiable if we accept them from Jesus as given, and the Catholic Church has
accepted those. Father Koo, thanks very much for your call. Scott Appleby, how far do you think this reform call is going to go? Are we going to test the definition of the Catholic Church in America before it's over?
I don't think so. I think the reform will be moderate. That is, it will deal with procedures and policies, and hopefully it will be also a renewal of the spirit on the part of the bishops and the clergy and the laity. But there will not be a major reform on questions like celibacy or women or any of the other teachings of the church. The only way that might happen, or that we would speak of a schism in the church, a division that is really longstanding, would be if we return to business as usual, that is, to the practices of the past where there has been secrecy, lack of accountability, lack of transparency, and we have a recurrence of a scandal like this. In that case, I think it's three strikes and you're out altogether. That is, we've been through, this is now the second crisis of priestly misconduct, and I don't think we can afford another one. So, in a sense, it's up to the bishops and the priests to embrace the reform and to purify the priesthood.
Scott Appleby, thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Thank you.
Scott Appleby is director of the Kushwa Center for the Study of American Catholicism at Notre Dame. Jack Beattie, thank you for being with us this hour as well.
Thank you.
You can read the text of Pope John Paul's address to cardinals today at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
This is WBUR. We're fine.